Today is Monday, March 13th. We're going to be covering more muscle anatomy and physiology today. So why don't we do some review before we get into new material? I'd like to take you back a bit to what we covered before spring break. We were talking about what is found on page 78, getting into page 79. So what I'd like to do is turn you to the pictures on page 79 and help you label what we're looking at there. If you've come to this class from, say, Bio 110 or Bio 112, you may have seen these terms before. These are all parts of the muscle's microanatomy. Before we went on break, we were talking about how a skeletal muscle is structured. So we were looking at the big picture items like the epimysium. We were talking about the fascicles wrapped by perimysium. And then we were getting to the level of talking about the muscle cells themselves. Keep in mind that a muscle cell is also called a muscle fiber or a myofiber. There's three different names for the same thing. And when we talk about muscle cells, we're actually talking about a microscopic structure. Since it's microscopic, you have to use a microscope to be able to see all of these details. So when you pull up the detailed structure of a skeletal muscle in a microscope, you start to see the striation or the banding pattern. So we know that not only skeletal muscle is striated, but what other muscle tissue is also striated?
Cardiac.
So we're going to talk about these bands, A bands and I bands, because they create the banding pattern, that light and dark striation that we expect to see. So why don't we label this picture together? I'm going to start you by looking at that muscle cell. Muscle cells are also called muscle fibers. And they're also called myofibers. So we'll just start by recognizing the multiple names for a muscle cell. So muscle cells or muscle fibers are also known as myofibers. You may recall from before break that we talked about several different terms that started with the prefix sarco. There is a sarcolemma that wraps and covers this muscle cell. The other name for a sarcolemma is the plasma membrane. So just want to kind of pull that term back into your consciousness. So all this covering out there, that covering is the sarcolemma, that's the myofibers plasma membrane. So inside of our muscle cell, you'll notice there are tiny little organelles called myofibrils. That word's way up top there. Myofibrils are long, skinny organelles, and they are situated inside your muscle cell. No other kind of tissue has these myofibrils. It's just muscle tissue, and it is the job of the myofibril to contract and shorten the muscle. Okay. So the organelle called the myofibril is what contracts and shortens the muscle. Now, that myofibril is what has this light and dark banding pattern that we're going to explore down below.
Myofibril, what contracts?
What contracts and shortens the muscle. So you wonder how we get from a striated or a striped muscle to something that looks like this. At first glance, there's not really an apparent banding pattern, but there in fact is a light and dark banding pattern that we're going to explore. So what you're looking at on the bottom picture is the detailed structure of proteins within a myofibril. We have not worked in this level of detail before in this class. So we are looking at proteins that make up a myofibril. That's really, really small detail here. The first and easiest thing I'm going to point out to you is a Z-shaped zigzag membrane. and I think it's pretty easy to spot, this zigzag membrane is in fact called a Z-line or a Z-disc. And that's going to be the first thing we look for. So that zigzag-shaped membrane anchors a certain type of protein filament. Okay, so there are two filaments within our myofibril. They are called thick filaments and thin filaments. What type do you think is anchored to the Z line?
Thin.
Thin, yeah. So if you look at the two lines here, that's a skinny line, and that one's called a thin filament. Compare that to this one. This one is a thicker line. That one's called a thick filament. So just based on how thick or thin the line is, we simply name those types of protein filaments by thick or thin. Now, reality-wise, that thin filament is made up of a protein called what? Actin. Good. So we know a couple of things so far. We've got the Z lines built in here. Those Z lines or Z discs are anchors for our thin filaments. We also know that those thin filaments are composed of a protein mostly called what? Thin ones are mostly
actin.
Good. Now you'll notice there's also some thick filaments here. These thick filaments are made up of myosin, and they have little knobs sticking off the top called what? Myosin heads. Yep, those little bumps sticking up are called myosin heads. Okay, so we've got thin filaments made of actin, we've got thick filaments made of myosin, we've got bumpy little structures sticking up off those myosin filaments. They're called myosin heads. The labeling is actually part of the multiple choice instead of on the essay portion. But so I would expect it to be part of the test, multiple choice, not necessarily the end. Okay. Are you so far so good with this? Something I want to show you is the distance between the Z lines. The distance between those zigzag shaped lines is called a sarcomere. So we're going to bracket off and label one of those sarcomeres. A sarcomere is a unit. It runs from Z line to Z line. Sarcomere is a unit. It runs from Z line to Z line. All right, so let's talk about the banding pattern. We know that the striations or bands that create the striations we see on the muscle actually originate here with these muscle myofibrils. So let's find, first of all, a dark band. So a dark band is created by the thick filaments. What I'm going to do is I'm going to circle the entire thick filaments, and that just happens to take up a bit of those thin filaments. You can see we're going to get the ends of them in there. But between our dotted lines here, that's what we're going to call this, our A band or dark band.
So I'll give you a hidden clue here. The term dark actually has an A hidden in it. That's because dark bands are known as A bands. A bands have thick filaments and little bits of thin filament stuck in there. Notice what's not in an A band. There are no Z lines within the A band. We've kind of cut them out of our delineation there. Light bands, by contrast, have the I in the term, and light bands are alternately known as I bands. Now, to locate an I band, I'm going to have to look for my Z line. I'm going to circle the area around my Z line, but I should not include any white. No A band, no thick filaments, right? So let me just put the outline here for the edge of our A band. So between our two dotted lines here, right around that Z line, that's going to be considered our I band or our light band. So just right in here. So around every one of our Z lines, if you circle the area that includes thin filaments only, no thick filaments, that's where you're going to find one of your I bands. So down here at the other end, we might as well circle another one of our I bands. Is if you include just the thick filaments and the little pieces of thin that get stuck in there, that's what we consider an A band. Okay, so what you're looking at is a relaxed myofibril. This means if you're sitting there with your arm down by your side, those biceps brachii muscles are relaxed. That means that you have visible light and dark bands, and you also have a visible place within your A band where there are no thin filaments. So if you catch right here through the middle, I know we got a pretty busy picture, but I'm trying not to include any of my thin filaments in this zone here inside of my A band. Do you know the name of that zone?
H
zone, good.
So just remember, no.
No thin filaments, yeah.
So H zone is only thick in the middle?
Yeah, only thick in the middle of the A band. So let's review. This structure that you're looking at here is the detailed protein setup of a myofibril. So what is a myofibril? It's inside a muscle cell. It is an organelle. Yeah, it's what shortens that muscle cell. Good, it's an organelle. So you're looking at the structure of an organelle here. Now this organelle is made up of two major types of proteins. They are actin and myosin, good. Now, actin filaments are also known as thin filaments. Myosin filaments are known as?
Thick.
Thick, good. Which one of those two is anchored to a Z line?
Thin
filaments, good. So thin filaments are anchored to the Z line. Now, in combination with the Z line, those thin filaments make a light-colored band known as the?
I
band, good. Now, if we take a look over here at our thick filaments are making up an area that we call our H zone and A band. Good. So if I'm looking specifically down the middle region of my A band and I see no thin filaments, I am specifically within the H zone. But if I widen it out a little bit and I include all of my thick filaments, you're noticing that I do get little pieces of my thin filaments in there. That wider area is what we call our A band. Okay? So is the A band a light or a dark region?
Light.
It's a dark region, good. Okay, what type of filament contains a little bumpy structure called a myosin head? Thick filaments or myosin, good. Okay, so just want to repeat that you're looking at a relaxed muscle cell here, and the way I know it's relaxed is I've got a visible H zone here in the middle, and I've got two nice looking I bands on either side of that A band. Now, by comparison, on the bottom of your page, you're looking at a contracted muscle. Whoops, let's get you a picture here. Okay, and you'll notice in the contracted muscle, what's happened to your H zone?
It's gone.
Gone. I bands, what happened to them?
Short.
Yeah, they're gone, they're short, and some people say they disappear because I really couldn't circle an area around my Z line that captures any of our thin filaments. So we've butted up against those Z lines, these thick filaments. One more thing to notice about the picture where we see contracted muscle. What do you notice about the length of your sarcomere? It's shorter, yeah. In a relaxed muscle, the sarcomere is longer, but notice the distance between the Z lines has shortened here in the contracted picture. So yeah, in fact, we do shorten the muscle during contraction, and it's the sarcomere that actually shortens for us. Okay?
And when you said the H zone disappears?
H zone disappears, I bands disappear, and the sarcomere shortens. All of that happens in a contracted muscle picture. You guys have probably already flipped the page and noticed that page 80 has an answered copy for you. So if you want to practice labeling this at home, you may want to print off an extra page 79, practice filling in the parts, and then you can compare it against page 80. You have what? So here's a picture from a textbook, just to see if we can find all our parts again. You'll notice that we've got our zigzag shaped Z lines. What type of filament is anchored to the Z lines?
Band.
Yep, so there they are. You'll notice these red lines in here are representing our thick filaments. And this area of our A band where there are no thin filaments is known as our H zone. Is the H zone part of an A band or an I band? An A band, good. And what happens to the H zone when the muscle contracts?
Disappears,
right? Because those thin filaments slide into that area. Good. So when you look at muscles and you see the striations, now you have a new appreciation for what you're seeing. This dark banding pattern here is our A band, and you'll notice the lighter pink color is our I band. And within that I band, we do find a Z line, which in this picture actually does look like a line. This is a muscle micrograph. It's up even more in detail than that previous picture. And let's see what we can locate here. Do you know what this structure is right here? Z-line or Z-disc? Good. Yep, Z-line or Z-disc. And notice this light-colored band surrounding it. That is what band?
I-band.
Yes, so there's an I-band. There is another I-band. There's another I-band. Even over here are some I-bands. And what's in between? This band here?
A-band.
Yeah, that's the A-band. And this zone right here through the middle? That's your H zone. Good. Now, is this muscle relaxed or contracted?
It's relaxed.
Good. It's relaxed. It has an H zone. Another way to tell? You've got I-bands, right? Okay. So kind of cool to be able to look at that, and now you realize, okay, that's where the striation or the banding pattern comes from. Let me tell you a little more about the thick and thin filaments. This is a picture of a thick filament, otherwise known as a myosin filament. You'll notice these little bumpy heads that stick up are called myosin heads. They're going to be a critical part of our discussion of muscle contraction. I personally think they look like golf clubs sticking up, so that's kind of what we're going to look at them as, is little clubs that grab on and stick to those thin filaments. I do want to share with you the details of a thin filament. It's not exactly as we advertised. It is thin. It is made of actin, but it also has two additional components. Well, this building used to be called the AT&T building, and that is great for remembering what you've got here in a thin filament. Thin filaments have A, T, and T. Okay, so actin is the majority of what you see. In this picture, the actin is composed of those little blue balls. The rest of it is a rope of tropomyosin, and this little complex here called troponin complex. All three pieces work together to make up a thin filament. We just generally call them actin filaments, but now we see there's more to it than that. There's actin, troponin, and tropomyosin involved here. So I'd like you to notice something about this tropomyosin rope. You'll notice this rope is kind of acting as a blindfold. Right behind that rope is a little binding spot, and they're covered up right now by that tropomyosin rope. So it is the job of that tropomyosin rope to cover up actin binding sites. Well, guess what is going to bind to that actin filament? Remember the golf club heads? Yeah, that's what's going to bind to that little covered up spot there. It's called an actin or an active binding site. Right now, it's currently covered up by your tropomyosin rope. So in this picture, you'll notice on the top, we've got, there's our rope of tropomyosin. It's covering up those binding sites. But notice in the bottom picture, that rope of tropomyosin has been moved out of the way. And the little binding sites here have now been revealed. So what allowed for that rope of tropomyosin to move out of the way?
Looks like calcium.
Looks like calcium. That is right. Good. So calcium, right here, has to bind to our complex of troponin. I kind of think of troponin as our guard shack. If calcium binds troponin, it's like putting a key in a lock. That allows for us to move the rope of tropomyosin off the binding site.
Sure.
Okay. So let's review. A thin filament has three components, AT&T, actin, a rope-like tropomyosin, and a complex called troponin. In this picture, you'll notice that tropomyosin is covering up the binding sites that are sitting there on those actin molecules. But all it takes is for calcium to come and bind your troponin complex. That binding will allow our rope of tropomyosin to move and reveal those binding sites. So, thinking back, this is way before break, there is a place inside your muscle cell where you can store calcium. This little storage site is called the sarcoplasmic reticulum, and it wraps around your myofibril. And I know I'm speaking Greek right now because these are all like $10 words, right? Okay, so the myofibril is what? Myofibril is an organelle. Yeah, your SR, your sarcoplasmic reticulum, is a sleeve, okay? So it is a sleeve that wraps around your myofibril. Its only job is to store and release calcium. By the way, that should be written for you in your course pack on the bottom of page 81.
So the calcium binds to the tropomyosin or the tropomyosin complex?
The troponin, actually. This complex right here, it binds to the troponin complex, and that moves the rope of tropomyosin.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's hit this from the top. We've got two kinds of proteins inside a myofibril. We've got thick filaments made of myosin. Those myosin filaments have bumpy structures called myosin heads. They look like golf clubs sticking out. There they are. Okay. Now, in thin filaments, we mostly have actin. But there's also two additional proteins. We've got troponin, which creates like a gate right here. And we've got this rope-like tropomyosin. Which of those structures covers up the binding sites on actin filaments?
Tropomyosin.
Right? That rope is a blindfold, and it covers the binding sites. In order for us to reveal those binding sites, we have to have a particular ion that binds the troponin complex. What ion? Calcium, good. And calcium is stored where? Sarcoplasmic reticulum, good. And the SR, or sarcoplasmic reticulum, is found wrapped around the myofibril like a sleeve. Okay, and I know you're thinking, well, wait a minute, we just learned in the last chapter that bones store calcium, right? Okay, that is correct. Bones do store calcium, but so does the SR. And if your SR, or your sarcoplasmic reticulum, is running low on calcium, where do you go to get the extra calcium from? From the bones, yeah. So, yes, you're right, bones do store the calcium, but we do have an immediately available supply there in that sarcoplasmic reticulum. Okay.
You said tropomyosin covers the binding site, and then you said something.
Let's see, tropomyosin covers the binding sites, and calcium has to bind the troponin complex in order to move that rope. So far, what you're learning today is the basis for heart contraction in Bio-211. We will refer back to this conversation in Bio-211. We talk about things like contractility, heart rate, the strength of heart contraction. So we're not just learning this to understand how skeletal muscle contracts. We're going to learn this for understanding how heart muscle contracts too. So this is certainly a concept that we just don't want to categorize in our brains and put it in the shell and leave it there. We're going to use it throughout Bio-210 and certainly throughout a lot of Bio-211. Okay, so one more time, we've got two main types of filaments, a thick filament composed of myosin, and the major protein here, of course, myosin has little projections known as heads. A thin filament has three kinds of proteins, actin, troponin, and tropomyosin. Which one of those is a rope-like structure?
Tropomyosin.
Good. Which one of those is a complex that binds calcium?
Troponin.
Troponin, good. And so where is calcium stored?
SR.
SR, good. And that SR is a sleeve that wraps around an organelle called?
Myofibril.
Myofibril, good. And if you don't have enough calcium available for your SR, you can always go and get it from your bones. Now keep in mind we studied some hormones like calcitonin, calcitriol, even parathyroid hormone, and if you need extra calcium, parathyroid hormone will destroy your bone matrix, releasing calcium for your muscles to be able to contract. So that's all related.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
You said myofiber, but is myofiber and myofibril just two different things?
Two different things, yeah. Myofibril is the organelle inside a myofiber. A myofibril is an organelle inside your myofiber. And myofiber, we can also use the word muscle cell too. So I think we're ready to talk about how muscles contract. The information on page 81 is just a summary page. It covers pretty much what we've talked about so far. It's just all written out for you. And I'm going to flip on over to page 83, and we're going to talk about the excitation-contraction coupling mechanism. I'm going to do this backwards, so bear with me. It'll make sense when we get through.
But I'm actually going to start you not on page 83, but I'm going to flip you on over to page 84. About halfway down on page 84, you're going to talk about contraction. So this is what we're most familiar with. So we'll start with contraction first. Okay, so to kind of give you the background, you may recognize our myosin filament with its head right here. Looks like a golf club, and it's walking along this thin filament down below. Thankfully, this is working in slow motion because we can start to identify all the pieces and parts here. This whole structure all down here, that's our thin filament. All of that is our thin filament. These yellow portions, they are actin. The rope is what? Tropomyosin, and the complex right there, it's kind of a pink color, purple color, red color, that is troponin. Okay, so you've got your three parts now made up for your thin filament. Let's see, let's look for ATP. ATP is a green ball, and there it comes, and it attaches to that myosin head. There it is. Okay. So ATP is involved in muscle contractions. It actually powers the release of the head from those thin filaments. You'll notice that the head attaches and then it lifts off and frees itself. Every time it lifts off and frees itself, we have to power that release with ATP. Okay? So that's one thing we're going to look for. Another thing we should look for is calcium. You'll notice it's a little yellow ball in the picture there, and there it is. Watch it, here it comes, there it is. And every time calcium binds one of those troponin complexes, you'll notice that troponin complex rotates and it moves that tropomyosin rope. So what happens to the binding sites on the actin filament when you move the rope?
They're revealed.
They're freed up, they're revealed, right? Okay. So that calcium that's coming in is coming from the SR. That SR is a sleeve that wraps around your myofibril. So without calcium, you would not get those binding sites revealed. Okay. All right, so let's go to the middle of your page there. And in order to have a muscle contraction, we have to have a nerve impulse. We're going to cover that in just a moment, but the nerve impulse is oftentimes called an action potential. So the action potential is a nerve impulse. It moves into the sarcoplasm. Let's get you a picture there. It moves into the sarcoplasm, which is the cytoplasm of your muscle cell, and it moves down through T-tubules. So let me show you what we're talking about. This is something we discussed in our last class period before our break. Okay, so here we've got these myofibrils. This sleeve right here that looks like a blue lacy sleeve is our sarcoplasmic reticulum. And these structures that invade into our muscle cell, these are T-tubules. They're running at a transverse setup to the outside. So they're running perpendicular, you might say. So in order to get a muscle contraction going, we have to send the nerve impulse in these T-tubules. We have to tell these SR to release calcium. Okay, and so that's your first blank there. The action potential causes the sarcoplasmic reticulum, or SR, to release calcium. The blank is SR, or sarcoplasmic reticulum. It says now calcium binds troponin. The binding of calcium to troponin causes that rope-like tropomyosin to move, and the movement of that tropomyosin rope reveals binding sites on your actin filaments. What happens next? Myosin heads now take advantage of those binding sites. They reach up and they bind to that binding site. And the only way to release the head is to power it through what? ATP. Good. Okay. Alright, so what I'm going to walk you through now is this whole contraction stuff. It continues over on page 85.
I'm going to hit the lights. Maybe that'll help us see a little bit better. So notice you're looking at a close-up detail of a myofibril. They're showing us a sarcomere. You'll notice that we have our zigzag-shaped Z lines, thin filaments in yellow. Red are the myosin filaments. And of course, those myosin filaments have little heads sticking out. All right, so when you zoom in, you've got your thin filament up top, you've got your thick filament down below, and there's your myosin head sticking up off the structure. Do you recognize your rope of tropomyosin here? Okay, so it's green, and you'll notice you also have a complex here of troponin. Okay. So what must have just bound to our troponin complex?
Calcium,
good. Now, taking advantage of those revealed binding sites, this myosin head perched up and contacted one of those binding sites. What must this be to power the release?
ATP.
ATP, it tells us, of course. And that allows the head to unbind and relax back into its original position.
So ATP powers the myosin head.
ATP powers the myosin head, that's right. So we're looking at a specific part of a theory called the sliding filament theory. This specific part is called the cross-bridge cycle and cross-bridge formation. Every time that myosin head reaches up and attaches to a binding site on that thin filament, we say a cross bridge has formed. Watch what happens to the position of that myosin head. That's called a power stroke. You've seen pictures, excuse me, of snakes striking and biting, right? That's what this is. It's a pivoting of that myosin head. It allows for us to slide and move that thin filament up top. So in order to release the myosin head and repeat this process of power stroke, what powers the release of that head?
ATP.
ATP. Okay, this is in reality what is happening. All of these structures are myosin heads. They're walking along and pulling those thin filaments. This is why we call the sliding filament theory. Watch what happens to your H zone right through the middle. Gone, right? There goes your I bands, okay? And what happens to the sarcomere length as we slide those filaments toward the center? Shortens, yeah. Once the calcium is no longer needed, it is restored in the SR. That allows this rope of tropomyosin to recover those binding sites. And now, is there any possibility for muscle contraction to occur? Can't do it at this point, right? Okay. So what I'd like to do is play this through for you one more time. We'll talk about this again because it's a process of sliding filaments. There is no shortening of either filament here. So this actually walks us through most of the top of page 85. Okay. So the sliding filament theory for muscle contraction involves sliding of filaments. I want to emphasize here that in order to shorten a muscle, there are no contractions or shortening of the actual filaments. All we're going to do is take those filaments and literally slide them past one another. You're looking at myofibrils. These are all myofibrils. We're looking at one individual unit there called a sarcomere. We know that during muscle contraction, what should happen to that sarcomere's length? It should shorten. Good. I always think this looks like rowing the boat. You know, you've got the little oars in the water. They're moving that boat along. And that's, in fact, what those myosin heads do. All right, so we've got our thick filament, our myosin head sticking up. Our thin filament here, composed of three parts. Actin, the rope is known as what? Tropomyosin. And this complex is? Troponin. Good. Now, to which of those three parts will calcium bind?
Troponin.
And when calcium does bind, what happens to the rope of tropomyosin? Good. Moves out of the way, allows for binding to occur. And that's, in fact, what we see here. There's our myosin head. They say it is in a cocked position. It is ready to perform a power stroke because it's bound to those binding sites. In order to release the head, we need ATP. So ATP has allowed that head to unbind and relax. On your worksheet, you may notice a term called rigor mortis near the top of your page. We know rigor mortis occurs after death. It's due to the lack of what?
ATP.
Yeah, so no ATP means those heads cannot relax and release. Okay, so I'd like to start you from the beginning of that cycle there, if this thing will cooperate.
Yeah, ATP allows the head to release from the troponin. Well, from the active filament.
From the thin filament, yeah. Well, just humor me, it's gone back to the beginning, so we'll just do it one more time. Okay, so what we're looking at is muscle contraction. We're watching a muscle shorten at the sarcomere. Keep in mind that we're not shortening anything but the sarcomere. We don't actually shorten the thin or the thick filaments here at all. It is. Look under the content, and it should say helpful animations, and they actually talk you through it. Okay, so here we go. We've got our myosin head. It's in a position ready to bind to those thin filaments, but all we need is calcium to come from where?
SR.
Good. When calcium binds to troponin, it moves rope-like structures called tropomyosin away from the binding sites. Now that those binding sites are revealed, what will happen to our myosin head?
Connects.
Good. That connection is called a cross bridge. The pivot that is formed is called a power stroke. In order to release the head from the thin filaments, we have to power this with what?
ATP.
Good.
Cross bridge,
that's right. Okay, so there is our calcium bound to troponin. The binding sites are revealed. Myosin heads reach up and form a cross bridge. That cross bridge occurs when the head binds to an actin filament. That alone is not enough to cause muscle shortening.
Simply having the head bind is not going to cause those filaments to slide. What you need, though, is step two here, called the power stroke. What happens to the position of the head during the power stroke? Moves forward. Yeah, they say it pivots, it moves forward, and you notice it pulled that thin filament along. That's what we're looking for, is to pull and slide those thin filaments. One slide of the thin filament is not enough to cause a marked shortening of your muscle, so we have to release the head and repeat. So how do we release the head? ATP. ATP, right. And so they say that allows us to reactivate the head. It puts it back into a cocked position and allows for an additional cross bridge and power stroke to occur. This is a fantastic picture here. You get a sense of how all those heads are walking along, pulling and sliding those thin filaments. I want you to notice that none of the filaments by themselves shorten. What actually shortens is the distance between what?
Z-lines.
Yes. So watch as the Z-lines are being pulled, and we lose our H-zone, we lose our I-bands, and now the muscle returns back to its relaxed state. So when we return to our relaxed state, you'll notice all these purple structures are calcium ions. They are returning for storage where?
SR.
Good. And of course, that allows for those binding sites to be recovered by what structure?
Tropomyosin,
right. So tropomyosin covers the binding sites, and now it is impossible for us to have a cross bridge take place.
So during the contraction, you're looking for the Z-lines.
Yeah, Z-lines move closer, sarcomere shortens, I-bands and H-zone should disappear. So this is a story that you want to be able to tell come test time. You want to be able to talk about the role of calcium in a muscle contraction. You want to be able to talk about what the myosin heads do to promote the muscle contraction. You'll want to appreciate why ATP is critical for us to have muscle contractions occur. And of course, what happens when you don't have any ATP? Rigor mortis, exactly. Okay, so just to kind of give you a feel for what's happening to those filaments, when we have a relaxed muscle, you'll notice there's plenty of distance between the Z-lines. There's a nice wide I-band around those Z-lines, and there's a visible H-zone in the middle. Notice that when we have the sliding filament theory in action, that we tend to shorten the distance between those Z-lines, and we eventually have those A-bands butted up against, or those thick filaments in the A-bands butted right up against those Z-lines. So this shortened muscle here is, of course, doing work. That's really the only way muscles do work, is to shorten and to pull our bones. In order to relax the muscle, we have to cover up those binding sites, and we do that by removing calcium. Where does calcium go to be stored? Back to the SR, good. And of course, that allows us to increase the distance between our Z-lines and make that muscle once again relax. I want to emphasize here that the sliding filament theory focuses on sliding of filaments, just like taking your fingers and sliding them past one another. There is no shortening of these filaments. What truly shortens here is what?
The sarcomere,
yeah. So keep in mind, the sliding filament theory deals with the sliding of the filaments and the shortening of the sarcomere. We don't actually shorten any of these filaments. None of them bunch up. The goal here is to slide these filaments past one another.
That way you have muscle cramps if you don't have enough.
It could be ion related, like potassium or calcium. It could be nervous system related too. Yeah.
said the two things to remember, shortening of the sarcomere and the what?
The filaments don't actually shorten themselves. They just slide past one another. Here's another picture to appreciate the I bands up here on the top. They're light colored around the Z line. And as we start to do contraction, you'll notice the I bands pretty much disappear. And all we have is just a dark muscle. That's because those I bands have been lost due to the invasion of those thick filaments into their areas. So the muscle, in fact, does shorten because they've got a long strip on the top two pictures and a short strip down here on the bottom. That means the sarcomere literally got shorter during muscle contraction. I do want to mention a couple of terms there under number four, isotonic and isometric. Okay, iso is a prefix for both of those terms. That's number four on page 85. Iso as a prefix means what? Same. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. Isotonic contractions and isometric contractions do sound very similar. But the word metric means length, and so isometric contractions do not change length. They have the same length. So let me explain what the difference is between these two contractions. If all you do is form a cross bridge and you don't actually pivot or power stroke that muscle, we say you have performed what's called an isometric contraction. So if you're performing an isometric contraction, you can push against this wall as hard as you can, and you can feel your biceps and triceps muscles bulk up. That's because you're forming cross bridges. But since this wall is an immovable structure, you can push here all day, every day, and not actually get any kind of shortening of that muscle. So isometric means same length. The muscle itself does not shorten. All you do is form cross bridges. Another example besides pushing against a stationary wall would be carrying grocery bags. If you carry grocery bags that weigh 20 pounds, then you feel your muscles in your arm bulk up because they're contracting, but they're contracting isometrically, not isotonically. So if they're very heavy and you're just walking with those bags down by your side, you feel your muscles doing work, but there's no shortening that's going on. That's isometric contractions. Now, if you were to take that heavy grocery bag, walk into your house, and then lift it up onto the counter to sit it down on your counter, now you've actually shortened your muscles in the upper arm. That process involves isotonic contractions. You'll notice isotonic contractions actually do involve shortening. That means those cross bridges turn into power strokes, and then in turn we slide those filaments, shortening the muscle. That is the difference between isotonic and isometric contractions. Notice with isometric, we do not shorten the muscle. It just contracts because cross bridges are locked in place. But with an isotonic contraction, we actually do make those cross bridges take the next step. That is to perform a power stroke, and that is to shorten that muscle. Okay, so muscle shortening is a hallmark sign of isotonic contractions. Can you give me some other examples of isometric contractions?
Wall sit.
What's that? Wall sit, yes. Good. You're not going to push the wall down, right? What are some other good examples of isometric contractions?
Not doing a push-up?
Yeah, not doing a push-up. Yeah, just...
Planks.
Yeah.
Planks,
yeah. There's not a whole lot. Most of our movements are, in fact, isotonic, but yeah, there's a few where we don't actually produce contractions or shortening, so they would be, in fact, isometric contractions.
Could standing be one?
Standing is isometric, yeah, definitely. Because the floor is not going anywhere, hopefully.
Yeah.
How about some examples of isotonic contractions? Lifting weights, good. Any kind of muscle movement that produces shortening or movement of your joints, that is an isotonic contraction. Okay. Do you feel like you're starting to get a grasp on the sliding filament theory? Sort of, kind of. That's all. I just want you to get a little taste of it because we're going to go back and do the first part now. Yeah, there's a backstory here. So if you'll flip back with me, we're going to go backwards to 83. We're going to do it from the beginning now. They've cleaned our boards with something that took off the finish, so you know that's real fun because the erasers no longer work like they're supposed to, so we have to do our old-fashioned cleaning here to get them to release this X for the marker. So what I'd like to do is start you with the backstory. And this whole story that we're talking about today is called excitation-contraction coupling. Now, we just did contraction. That was the whole part about the sliding filament theory. What I'd like to do now is give you the backstory on excitation. So excitation starts on the top of page 83. And this is, as it says there, the link between the generation of an action potential and the start of a muscle contraction. You'll notice that it takes about 0.3 seconds for this to take place. In other words, how fast can you move your body? That's how fast this process takes place. So it originates with your brain. It travels down your spinal cord, out your spinal nerves, to your muscles. And that whole process of nerve impulse transmission takes around 0.3 seconds. That's pretty darn fast if you consider all of this stuff that has to take place. So let me take you down below that picture. That picture you're looking at is called a motor unit. The word motor unit implies muscle movement. So you'll notice we've got a motor neuron, and it sits on a number of, say, skeletal muscle cells or muscle myofibers, and that one motor unit may stimulate that whole group of skeletal muscles. So if you have one neuron communicating with all those muscles, you would expect them to work together as a unit, right? Okay, now if you look individually, there are individual little fingertips spread out from that motor neuron. Each of those individual fingertips is called an axon terminal. Those axon terminals will stimulate one individual muscle cell, and that relationship is called a neuromuscular junction. So what I'm drawing up here is a picture of a neuromuscular junction. It is the relationship between one axon terminal and one muscle cell. And now it is that relationship that we're going to explore in more detail for the process of excitation. This is how we tell our muscle cell that we want it to contract. We send a nerve impulse down our motor neuron. It separates into all of these various axon terminals, and it tells our muscle cells then to contract. Okay. You'll notice there's a blank there about halfway down your page for the gap of space between your axon terminal and your sarcolemma of your muscle cell. That gap is called what?
Synaptic cleft.
Good. That is our synaptic cleft. Okay, so let me repeat what we've got. What we're looking at is the process of excitation. We are looking at an axon terminal, which is an ending portion of a motor neuron, and its relationship with one individual muscle cell. This is called a neuromuscular junction, and you'll notice that, in fact, that neuron and the neighboring muscle cell do not touch. The gap of space between the two is called what? Synaptic cleft. Good. So it is now our job to communicate our wishes to that muscle cell. And our want is, hey, muscle cell, we want you to contract. So since these two don't actually touch, we can't tap that muscle cell and say, hey, got a job for you to do. We have to communicate this through a chemical neurotransmitter. So neurotransmitters are released from axon terminals, and they travel across that synaptic cleft, and they carry the message to our neighboring muscle cell. You'll notice on your worksheet the name of our particular neurotransmitter. What is it called?
Acetylcholine.
Good. We're going to abbreviate acetylcholine as ACH. That's a capital A, a capital C, and a lowercase h. So here comes a nerve impulse. It travels down the length of your axon terminal. When it arrives in your axon terminal, it stimulates the release of these vesicles. These vesicles are full of acetylcholine. So acetylcholine moves into your synaptic cleft, and it diffuses across to your sarcolemma. Keep in mind, the sarcolemma is just a fancy name for what? Muscle cells, plasma membrane, okay? And so that ACH molecule is heading for the muscle cell's plasma membrane, known as your sarcolemma. Okay, so let's talk about something that we're familiar with. If you decide that you would like to go to the movies, you go up to the box office, you pay your fee for the movie, and that allows you admission into the movie theater, right? They take your ticket from you, that allows you to enter the movie theater. So this is kind of how it works with a muscle cell. These are called sodium channels, and right now they're currently sitting here closed. I'm out of space up there at the top. I'm going to draw some more down here at the bottom. And I also should tell you that sodium are ions that are stuck on the external surface of our muscle cell. So right now, they're hanging out outside our muscle cell. They haven't paid their fee to get into the movie, right? So they're stuck out there hoping somebody will come along and say, hey, you can go in. But right now, they're stuck hanging out here on the outside of our muscle cell. Well, along comes acetylcholine. Guess who's going to pay our fee to get in to see the movie? ACH. So ACH, acetylcholine, comes along and it binds to one of our sodium channels. Okay? When it binds to a sodium channel, the sodium channel opens up, and of course, because it's called a sodium channel, sodium comes into the muscle cell through the open sodium channel. So that is critical. If you want to get in to see the movie, you've got to pay the fee, and ACH pays the fee for sodium to come into that muscle cell. So muscle cell is now going to have sodiums rushing in through those open sodium channels. Exactly right. Good. ACH binds the sodium channel.
Okay.
That allows sodium to rush in through that sodium channel. If you are sodium and you're hanging out outside this muscle cell and ACH doesn't pay your fee to get in, what happens to you? You stay on the outside, right? You have to have acetylcholine pay for you to get in to see the movie, and that involves binding that sodium channel and opening up that gateway. Otherwise, the gate just stays closed and sodium sits on the outside. Now, it is the inward rush of these sodium ions into our muscle cell that causes excitation, and that excitement is what causes our SR to release calcium. And you know the story from here, right? Once calcium is released from your SR, it binds to our troponin complex, and of course that allows for
myosin heads.
Good, good. You got it? That's good. Hey, that's a start. Let me mention ACHE near the bottom of your page. It spells ache. It spells ache for a reason. Okay. Bottom of 83, ACH is acetylcholinesterase. Go home and impress your friends and family with that one, right? Okay, so ASE tells you I am an enzyme, and enzymes help to speed up reactions. What acetylcholinesterase does is it helps to break down and recycle acetylcholine. Why? What if you leave acetylcholine sitting here on your sodium channel? Relaxation will not occur. Yeah, if ACH sits there, sodiums continue to come in, right? And so if sodiums continue to come in, the inside of your muscle cell stays excited, and you continue to release calcium, and you continue to promote muscle contraction. So you're exactly right. If you don't use ACHE to recycle acetylcholine, your muscle cell will never relax, and you will ache. Okay, so acetylcholine breaks down ACH. Why? It promotes relaxation of the muscle cell. It promotes relaxation of your muscle cell by getting rid of ACH. And that next blank, by the way, temporarily permeable to sodium ions. So now that we've done it a little out of order, we'll go back on Wednesday and repeat this a couple of times through. I hope that we'll get it to where it sticks for you on Wednesday.